Long time no see.
Hi, I know. I was like, oh my God, wait, is this the
I was, it's funny you're saying that. Right now I'm checking. I was like, oh shoot, because I don't remember. Is it the one that I updated? I'm pretty sure it's right though. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure Mark holds this one.
Yeah. So I just checked the calendar because it's funny because both of them end in like 09. Like both of the like
Oh.
past, but one's like Q and T and one's like a HZ or something. And so I was like having some doubts, but I think we're okay.
Okay.
I mean, so far so good. Hey, Nah.
Cutie. Hi.
How are you?
Oh my gosh. I'm good. Just getting back to work after 3 weeks is hard.
Oh, totally. Where were you again?
I went to Europe with my partner. We went to London, Belgium, and Spain, and it was so nice.
Oh man,
Oh my gosh.
want that so bad.
Do it. Don't even think. Did you like one better than the other?
I've
We've been to Spain before. We went to Barcelona, and so we went there just to eat the seafood because I love seafood. So really recommend it, and it's cheaper, so you can like live large, but no, Belgium was really nice. It was my first time. The waffles were great. The fries were great. And then London was cool. I saw Stonehenge, so I feel like that was, yeah, really iconic. So that was cool.
That's
Yeah.
awesome.
That is really iconic. Oh my gosh. How did you deal with like the language barrier?
There was no language barrier.
Really? Oh.
I feel like I didn't even get to hear like the accents. I was looking forward to hearing people's British accents, but like when we go to restaurants, there's workers from different countries, so you're not really hearing the British accent. And then we saw a friend who's American, so we there was no British accent. Yeah.
Okay.
And then in Belgium, they spoke French and is it Dutch? Which, yeah, so I guess that was kind of new to me, but for the most part, everyone speaks English wherever we go.
Okay.
Yeah, all you need to know is English, and I guess some Spanish is helpful too.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Thomas.
Everybody.
Hey there. Hey there. I'm at the state CPG meeting in
Multitasking.
Sacramento.
Oh.
Oh, snap. Hey, everyone.
What was that?
I was just saying hi to, I don't know, I guess strangers in the background.
The room.
Oh,
Yeah.
so they had us submit our profiles,
Oh,
I won Best Picture.
oh, I met
That's,
you.
and I had no idea. They just said, send me a picture. And I'm like, okay. And I walk in and it's like plastered on the wall. I'm like, are you kidding me?
True.
But then I won Best Picture.
Looks like I think we're just waiting for at least one more person to reach quorum because we do have a couple people that excused themselves just before.
Oh.
Really? Who are those people?
Well, we have people as in one person. I wasn't trying to isolate them, but we already had TJ with LOA. Matt's out this time, and then Irma is sick.
Oh.
So we're just basically waiting for the co-chairs.
Yeah. Manuel said he'll be here, so he should be popping in shortly.
I just got a notification he popped into the steering committee. So he must have clicked the wrong link.
Oh yeah, because it kind of both went out around the same time. Totally get it.
So hopefully he'll switch over
Is
shortly.
attendance after Thanksgiving usually okay? Do we usually have enough folks attending? Because it is the Monday right after the holiday.
We definitely have people who are not will not be there, for sure.
Hi, Manuel.
Hey.
I'll probably jump off at 3:20 is when this break is over. Funny, so Sarah and JP are here with me though. But they're not on this committee.
And after my presentation, I do have to hop off as well because when I was gone, someone scheduled another meeting that I have to participate in. So I guess it's just going to be manual as the What do
committee.
we do about that?
I don't know if there's anything we really can do. I think not. We should definitely provide the opportunity for Nod to go over her presentation. And we do have Dara coming at 3:30 to go over the blueprint presentation. So even if it's only Manuel, it's not just Manuel.
As he's frozen.
If I can linger, I will after this break. So cool.
So are we so good to the go amount.
I don't know. I was asking the same question. Like with the folks who are excused, is two people actually quorum, or three people actually?
Three people should be quorum. Actually, double check my work. This is what's hard with like odd numbers. So it's 5 divided by 2 plus 1. Are we going towards the larger side or the smaller side? So like,
oh no, if it's 5, 3 is quorum.
That's what I thought. Okay, cool. That's what I was saying. So 3 should be good to go.
Okay, so whenever you're ready, Manuel. Hopefully Chuck will join us at some point.
Okay, sure. So why don't we start with just roll call, right? Check in, I guess. So everyone, Manuel Vasquez, council co-chair, council affairs co-chair. Mark Molnar.
Mark, council staff.
Kira.
Kira, council staff.
David Crown.
Hey everyone, Crown, council staff.
Nali.
Marin County Council member.
Thomas Noble.
Thomas Noble, they, them pronouns, government co-chair.
Awesome. Okay, that being said, why don't we bring up the minutes from last time? Kira, can you help us? I also have my email open, so.
Oh, I think it's a draft agenda first.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Sorry. Thank you. So here's the draft agenda, everyone. Does anybody have anything they wanted to say before we move to pass this? Approved by consensus. Okay, great. Now we're going to look at the minutes. Okay. Approved by consensus. No, I have any. Okay. Great. Okay. And any announcements right now?
You know, I do wonder if people are leaving like Thomas and not, if we actually want to
just go
before we go into anything, actually go to the last agenda item, which is determining when our next meeting will be.
Okay.
So the council and its committees has traditionally skipped December and not met either as a full council or in the various committees in December. That said, if you all want to meet, you can. I don't have any presentations for you to review. So it's up to the three of you. Would you like to meet in December and be an exciting outlier, or would you like to meet in January like the rest of the committees?
I would move to meet in January. How do people feel? Okay, great.
Agree.
I don't know. Exciting outlier has...
Sorry, 2 out of 3. 2 out of 3. It doesn't matter your opinion. You're outvoted.
Thank you. So the motion's approved to meet in December. Thank you, Mark. Okay. And yeah, in the interest of time, so no announcements, it doesn't sound like, no public comment probably. So Marin County annual update. Now I'll take it away.
Okay, great. Oh, I guess I do have a quick announcement, or okay. I guess I can do it at the council too, but we are doing like a World AIDS Day event, probably just like everyone else, on Friday, December 1st. So we'll be, our council is co-hosting with the SPAR Center, and we'll be hosting it at our 3240 Kerner office on Friday from 5 to 7. Speakers, memorial, people can share stories about loved ones they've lost. So it'll just be a nice intimate event for clients and providers and community members. Okay, and I can share my screen. I can just share my screen, Crown. That way I can just like scroll through.
Thanks, Na.
Okay. Do you see my screen? I've shared.
Yes.
Actually, no. I think I like it smaller. Okay. You know, same as San Mateo, we usually keep the same format and I've updated the numbers. I won't go into too much detail. I'll go a little bit slower when I actually do the presentation. And so here we have the data for all our reported cases. And for Marin County, we always separate out between San Quentin and community. And so the 618 living cases in the community. And right here, we see the data for the gender for people living with HIV, and N is 616. And our breakdown is about 85% male, 14% female, and 1% transgender.
I don't see that on my screen. Is that, am I reading?
Am I sharing the wrong thing? Maybe I'll reshare. I have multiple things.
Part A. Yeah. It looked like it was your allocations you were sharing.
I have multiple copies open. Okay, let me
share.
You screen too. Okay, wrong one. Okay, I think this is correct.
Okay, yeah, we can see the demographic and stuff. Yeah.
Sorry, so yes, this has our San Quentin and community numbers for living cases. And then our breakdown by gender, breakdown by age. And as you can see, a majority of folks over 50%, 58% are 55 and older. And as you know, Marin County has an older population in general as well. Right here, you see the breakdown by race ethnicity. We have whites at 59%, about a quarter are Hispanic Latino, 7% African American, and then 3% multiple races Asian. Transmission category, no big change from previous years. Majority is 65% MSM, 6% MSM and IDU, 7% IDU, 12% high-risk heterosexual contact. And the IDU numbers are low thanks to our syringe access program. Over here is the continuum of HIV care. So out of the 615 that were diagnosed, 79% were in HIV care, meaning they have at least one lab. And then retained in HIV care is, the definition makes it a little bit harder. So that's why the percentage is lower at 53%, because they need to have two or more labs at least 3 months apart in that year. And some folks don't feel like they need to see the doctor or get their labs done that frequently because they are generally healthy. And so they might skip that. And so what we like to look at is the viral suppression rate, which for us is at 73%. And so these percentages are actually identical to last year. So we haven't done better, but we haven't gotten worse either. And so, yeah, those are our percentages for 2021. And this data is provided by the Office of AIDS. And of course, if you look at our clients who are receiving Ryan White care services, you know, the rates, the percentages are a little bit better. Like we're at 89% for viral suppression within our 265 people who receive Ryan White care. But these numbers show for a Marin County resident, so it's a larger group. For new diagnoses, we average about 16 new diagnoses per year. So here's a chart you can see from the last 10 years. I think this year we're at 18, so it's a little bit higher, but still kind of flattening around the same number, 16 to 18. And then this is kind of where I want to spend a little bit more time looking at. So this chart shows the demographic breakdown for residents who are newly diagnosed with HIV. So the first chart shows 2013 to 2017, and then the following column is 2018 to 2022. And we're showing it in these 5-year brackets because our numbers are a little bit smaller, so it's easier to see the trends when we collapse it, the 5 years. Or is that 4 years, 13, 14, 15, no, it's at 5 years. So here's the breakdown, and then under the, and then I'll kind of just read out some of these observations that we see from the data. And so Overall, we do see a decrease in the number of diagnoses from the most recent 5 years to the previous 5 years. So as you can see, the total was 90, and the, in the most recent 5 years, it was 72. So that's an overall decrease of 20%, which is great. And instead of 1 in 4 being diagnosed with AIDS within a month of HIV diagnosis, it's 1 in 5. So that means the diagnoses are happening sooner, which is a good thing. And we do see the breakdown of more males than females, closer to 86% now. That's been an increase, which is closer to what it's typically been in Marin County. And the only age group that had an increase in both percent and count was folks who were in the 15 to 24 age group. I see a typo, I'm gonna fix it. The 55 and up age group had the largest decline. Right here, as you can see, is even though the numbers are a little bit smaller, but 20% to 8%. And then looking at race ethnic group, and this is a trend that we've been seeing in for a while now, is that increase in the Hispanic Latino community from 40% to 47%. And that's, you know, been increasing every time I do this report. And so this, so you looking at this data, we're really, you know, we know where we need to focus our prevention efforts. It's in young Latino MSM. And it's been, you know, kind of like what we've been looking at for many years now, since I've started. And so even though it's not related to our Ryan White funding, but, you know, with our prevention funding and even with our other funding as well, you know, with HCV, we try to do kind of that syndemic approach with HCV, HIV prevention, really focusing on the Latino group. So I'll do another plug for what we're doing in our prevention world, which is really looking at the zip codes that have the highest rates for STDs. So, you know, syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, but also HIV. And so a lot of those high rates we see in the San Rafael Canal area, which is predominantly Latino. And so we're working with community-based agencies who serve that community to really see if we can get more folks to test, more folks to come in, and really providing additional outreach through our Data to Care program, where we reach out to folks who have positive gonorrhea diagnoses to reach out and see if we can get folks on PrEP and connect them to other services. Because, you know, with the positive STI diagnoses, that population has the higher rate of HIV later on. So that's really our target population is Latino MSMs, and then we're also working with an agency that serves mainly Southern Marin, Marin City, which has a high African-American population, because the data shows the disparity. And so we really have to focus our efforts to serve the population that needs it. Yeah, and as you can see, Latinos only cover 17% of the population in Marin County, but you're seeing them at almost half of, at almost half of the cases. So that is a big disparity. For community input every year, we have our annual client satisfaction survey. I mail the survey to all of our Aries clients who say that we can send them mail. And so that's 154 clients. And the response rate was about half. Which is generally what I usually get, usually around 70 something clients will respond to the survey. And we ask them, you know, to rank and to assess how the services are going for each of the categories and for our service providers as well. In Marin County, we only have 2 service providers because we're a very small county. And so those 2 service providers cover all of our service categories. And then the council also sponsored a community forum in May to gather additional community input and to provide presentations on other resources for the community. And so, yeah, special shout out to the HCAP because Stephen was great and he also did a presentation and was able to connect with some clients as well. And so our care council, you know, we've been working hard to get more members. You know, we meet. Recently, we shifted to meeting about 5 times a year, but longer meetings just so we can get more done without going through all of the business items. So fewer meetings, but longer meetings. And we are doing pretty good with our membership. We did have new members join. And so we have 11 members right now, and 64%, so 7 of the 11 are consumers, which is great. And in August, we conducted the priorities and allocations process. And so, you know, our council also gets all of these data presentations just like SF does. So they received the presentation on the satisfaction survey, service category utilization. So looking at the UOS, UDC numbers for the services, looking at our ARIES data and the EPI data provided by an epidemiologist to help inform them as they go through their priorities and allocations. And so 8 members attended that meeting. And let me, of note, I'll point it out. I think it's easier to see here. Mental health, there was a decision to increase that by a little bit because this past year was actually the first time we actually had a wait list of folks who wanted mental health services and was unable to receive it. But right now, currently, fortunately, there is no wait list. And so we increased the mental health budget by a little bit to ensure everyone can access it. And then we reduced medical transportation because the utilization from the previous year wasn't as high. For our medical transportation, people get Clipper cards and bus passes. And I think that's mainly it. Something that did come up a lot is our food vouchers. So we do provide $80 food vouchers to clients who are lower income within the Ryan White population. That was increased from the previous year, which was $60. This is something that our clients really wanted because cost of food has gone up. Unfortunately, our service provider, they received 340B funding and were providing additional food vouchers, but then they didn't receive their 340B funding, and so they weren't able to offer food vouchers. So our clients were pretty upset about that because the need for food is high and they really like the food vouchers. But we'll see what we do in the next year. But, you know, as you all know, our budget hasn't increased for many years. As you can see, it's kind of stayed the same. And so it's hard to increase one budget and then, you know, take away from another. So that's kind of where we're at right now. But the council did unanimously approve this proposal, and they seem happy with it for now. And we do receive some Part B funding, which we provide medical case management at oral health and outpatient, and some funds to support our outreach worker, who's bilingual Spanish-speaking health educator. I think that's it. And then I know, Manuel, last year you asked about looking at the numbers of people who are unhoused. And yeah. So in ARIES, our number is 12 people who have indicated they are unstably housed. And then I connected with our whole person care because they have like a point in time count. So I'm asking to see what their count is in terms of for Marin County for people who are homeless and living with HIV, who's not part of our client population within Ryan White. So when they get back to me, I hope they'll have that number in a couple weeks. But within ARIES, it's 12. Our numbers are very small in comparison. So
Sure. And, you know, I'm really glad you segued into that because I did have a question comment. Just for my reference, because I remember, again, this was unanimously approved, but there was a reallocation of the housing funds can you refresh my memory? Where did those housing funds go to? Because I know it was reallocated.
Yes. So we separated it out as housing because it was easier for us to kind of see where the funds were going, but it was never housing case management. It was always housing payments. So it fell under emergency financial assistance, but we called it housing. I think that caused a lot of confusion for clients as well, because they thought like they would be receiving housing case management, but that wasn't what was being provided. And also when we were looking at the numbers, it was a handful of clients who were getting their rent paid for through the COVID pandemic. And it, we felt like it wasn't the best use of the funds and not the most equitable use of funds. And so in previous years, I wonder, oh, there it is. It is right here. So here you can see the housing, you know, 28,000, 48,000 and 40,000. So that was helping to pay rent for some folks. But wherever the funds were redistributed, as you can see here, emergency financial assistance did increase a little bit. Those funds are still being used to support either, you know, their phone bills, utility bills, that sort of thing. We felt like that was a little bit more fair and more folks could access that. And then we also felt that since Ryan White should be the payer of last resort, that they really should be accessing other services that are housing case management and could actually support them to find housing. And that should be through our whole person care system, coordinated entry system. Okay. Yeah.
How is that funded? Just by, you know, curiosity.
Yeah, I'm not sure where whole person care gets their money. Maybe Thomas knows whole person care. Do they get funding from federal?
It's inclusive of case. You're saying case management, housing navigation, things like that. Okay, that makes sense.
Yes.
I mean, I appreciate that. I am curious to know though, of the people that were assisted in previous years with, you know, it sounds like a subsidy payment. I don't even know if it was ongoing. But now it's just emergency financial assistance. So, because I worry, right, that those people may still not be able to afford their rent. And now that we've made it emergency financial assistance, you know, they can come in, but not ongoing maybe. So I'm just interested to know how those people are doing. And it's interesting too, looking at your numbers, that only MCM served one or is the priority rank. And then non-medical case management is number four. I just thought that was really interesting with the numbers in total, because usually case management, either non-medical or medical, is highly utilized, especially with clients that are not linked to care, that, you know, all that type of stuff. But okay, this is helpful.
Yeah. And in the past, usually these funds cover like one medical case manager and one benefits counselor, plus, you know, some other things in the budget. And our current subcontractor actually moved towards having two case managers, who's the case manager, but also the benefits counselor. So, yeah, but the funding, yeah, it basically covers half of two people and then half of two people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other people have questions? Can you follow up right now? No? Okay. Thanks so much, Na. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
And it looks like Thomas is up maybe next for the blueprint, the Vicente Consulting. Hey, Chuck.
It's actually not Thomas. It is Dara.
Dara, okay.
I'm right on time. Look at that.
Hey, Dara.
Hi. Hi, everybody. Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Thanks for having me. Let me see if I can get my screen shared here. Okay. I'm missing my presenter mode. Where is it? Hold on a second. Technology. Okay. Okay. Now we're going. Can you all see that? Yes. Okay, great.
Yes.
So thanks for having me. And we're going to talk about the blueprint today. So I've permanently adopted Bill's language of the twofer, threefer, fourfer. But today we're getting a twofer, which is one, I actually want to get, you know, some feedback and input from you on the draft blueprint, but also simultaneously we're reviewing the presentation for the council. And so I'm going to do the same presentation, but also would like to get your thoughts on the actual blueprint as well, to the extent that we're able to walk through it. So what I'm thinking for the council meeting is that we will actually have the draft blueprint that will go out on Monday. So I know it'll be over the holiday, so it's not really a week in advance, but that's as quickly as we can pull it together. And then at the meeting, we would share this presentation and open it up for discussion and feedback. And also would love to hear your thoughts about whether we should try to have a structured conversation at the council or just kind of leave it open-ended. But let's go through the presentation and then you can we can weigh in at the end and you can let me know what you think. So the blueprint is, what is it? It's the it's based on the state of California's recent strategic plan for ending the epidemics. And it's a template that the state provides. That's what the blueprint actually refers to for each county so that each county can develop its local version of an ending the epidemics or an ending the pandemic plan. So what does this have to do with San Francisco? Well, we already have plans here. We've got an ETE plan. We've had an integrated plan. What is this all? What is this new blueprint thing all about? So the way we've started to think about the blueprint is it's like a way to move forward San Francisco's Ending the Epidemics initiative into the next 2024 to 2026 period, with a real focus on the social determinants of health and strategies to address them. As we mentioned before, it's a forfer. It's now actually going to replace the integrated plan as to meet that requirement. So there won't be two plans going forward. It also fulfills the state's recommendation that each county have a blueprint. It's been very helpful in helping to inform the upcoming funding announcements. There's one coming out of, or there's one that has come out of CDC for STD from the STD branch, and then the HIV prevention for funding, the cooperative agreement funding, that funding announcement will be coming out soon. And then lastly, I think we're hoping that'll start to illuminate some of the ways maybe the work could shift or evolve and really look through the looking through that lens of social determinants of health. So why am I here? I'm not the state of California, obviously. I'm with Facenti Consulting and we hold the technical assistance contract to help the counties develop their blueprints. And so I'm your liaison on their behalf. So these are the social determinants of health represented in the blueprint: racial equity, housing first, health access for all, mental health and substance use, economic justice, and stigma. And really, the way I see this is that the state is really trying to elevate the importance of the social determinants of health. And that's why they've organized it around these social determinants. And what that essentially means is that there are many, many things that are done in the HIV, Hep C, and STI world that aren't specifically related to the strategies that are in this plan and therefore aren't included. The plan is not a giant, comprehensive, everything that's happening in San Francisco document. It's really focusing on kind of the new things and the things that have been planned to help advance ending the epidemics, and specifically those that relate to the strategies in the plan. And I'm gonna show you an example of that. So this is the temporary cover page. And the draft contains for each of the social determinants of health, this sort of gray box, a list of the strategies. And these strategies were identified by CDPH. They're the strategies from the CDPH plan. But in some cases, we've tailored them to San Francisco in situations where it made sense to do so. So there's the strategies. And then you'll also see in the blueprint, each section, each social determinant has a pretty lengthy table. That's the activity table. And so for Housing First, this is just the example for Housing First, you can see there's a few activities listed here. And then for each activity, it's indicated when, what's the time frame for the activity. Sometimes it's ongoing, sometimes it's a one-time thing. And then I wanted to highlight this important piece because you'll see it when you get the draft. It was really too complicated to try to figure out where is the best place to put each of these activities because everything is so integrated and so cross-cutting. So I tried to pick the best social determinant of health and strategy for the activity, but also indicate where else it was relevant. So in this case, these letters stand for Housing First Strategy 4. So it relates to the street medicine strategies. It also relates to Health Access for All Strategy 1 and Mental Health Substance Use Strategy 4. So that's kind of how we set it up. And the result, as you'll see, is the further along you get, the shorter and shorter the activity list is because they've been mentioned in earlier sections. So this is where we're at with our timeline. We're in the engagement process, getting feedback and input from folks. And the draft blueprint has been developed. It's in review by SFDPH right now, and we're meeting on Friday to get final feedback from them at this stage. We'll incorporate the feedback and get the draft out to the council on Monday. And then there'll be a process of finalizing the blueprint, which we haven't quite determined yet, but it may take a few months. We have to talk about whether there should be metrics and things like that. Just a little bit of background on how the blueprint was developed before we actually get into the content. So the DPH folks really dug deep, and Manuel too sent me some materials on all the stuff that is happening in San Francisco, recent grant proposals, funding reports, internal documents around like just planning documents. And so I kind of culled through, and I'm still culling through many of those and pulling out the relevant activities that relate to the blueprint strategies and kind of mix that all up and put it into the blueprint in the hopefully the way that it makes sense. And so it is based on something, but there's obviously plenty of room for feedback, input, and things that may have been missed. So these are, I'm just going to run through the blueprint content fairly quickly. Hopefully the council will have gotten it in advance and had at least some chance to review, but I'm going to go through it fairly quickly now. So racial equity strategies, these overlap highly with the economic justice strategies and activities. So we mentioned that here. So there's five key areas. One is around leadership and workforce development, expanding pathways for that, making sure that racial and ethnic data collection and stratification is done to help inform resources, making sure that the funding and resources are distributed equitably. Community engagement is a huge piece of the racial equity strategies, making sure we're having strategic partnerships. And then this last strategy is around having capacity building and training opportunities to engage in racial and social justice training. And I'll just note that as part of the state's effort, they have in their plan to offer free trainings to jurisdictions. So presumably those will be available at some point and San Francisco and other counties will be able to participate in those. So just a few examples of the activities that are discussed in this section. There's a lot of training and workforce development and leadership development things happening, such as the Chile program, the Academy, the Frontline Organizing Group. There's Project Invest. I'm not sure if folks have heard of that. That's an initiative out of the Center for Learning and Innovation at DPH. And it's really around broader workforce development, not just specific to this endemic. NPEP CSF is doing some really interesting things around leadership development. We'll definitely talk about the many, many ways that the EPI data has been stratified by race to help inform programming and resources and how the council has used that historically and continues to in order to inform decisions. This is a great place to talk about the centers of excellence and how they're a national model for incorporating race, language, and gender, into the conceptualization. And also to point out that the data has pointed us to the need for having prevention and care programs, particularly for Black and Latinx populations and also ANPI populations. And there are lots of programs in San Francisco for that, as you know. The Men of Color Program, Southeast Family Health Center, the Black Center of Excellence. There's also a Black Health Access Point through the prevention work. And the Latinx community, there are many programs too. Castro Mission Health Center, Instituto, the Mission Neighborhood Health Center, Center of Excellence, and the Latinx Health Access Point. And programs for ANPI communities as well through San Francisco Community Health Center and also the Asian and Pacific Islander Health Access Point. So lots to include in the racial equity section. Housing first strategies really overlap with the healthcare access for all and mental health and substance use. They're very intertwined. And the data collection and use is also a piece of this section, as well as infrastructure changes. And what they really mean, what the state really means by infrastructure changes, is like how the services are delivered in an integrated way that sort of incorporates and considers homelessness and housing. New models of access, how do we increase access to housing? Street medicine strategies, how do we bring services to people? And then low barrier housing options as well. So some of the things that are highlighted here are the Ward 86 pop-up clinic that's serving people experiencing homelessness, a mobile health access point that I believe is being developed. There's also I've learned to say this is WIPIC, the Whole Person Integrated Care Initiative, which includes the street medicine team. There's some HIV housing navigation that's being funded with the CARE Ending the HIV Epidemic dollars. That's fairly new and that's been really successful so far. And there's an initiative to have some stabilization beds for people experiencing homelessness with various conditions where housing would be really, really critical for successful treatment. The Getting to Zero initiative has some committees on people experiencing homelessness in 2024 and some activities around that. And there's also, I know that the council is aware of the Continuous Quality Improvement Initiative, looking at viral load equity for people experiencing homelessness and housing instability. So health access for all, again, overlaps with some of these other strategies. Redesigned care delivery, trauma-informed and responsive services, reducing hurdles to healthcare coverage, strong focus on cultural and linguistically appropriate and relevant services. And of course, the thing that we're always encouraged to do, which is collaborate and streamline, which is always so challenging, but really important when it comes to health access. So in this section, we've got activities around academic detailing, which is about making testing routine and opt out in certain settings like the emergency department so that that folks have easy access to testing in when they're encountering the care system. The department is also working on some syphilis screening workflows, particularly to address the congenital syphilis epidemic. And provider sexual health training is another thing that's been in conceptualization for a long time, but I think is really gonna ramp up to get providers really comfortable with talking about sexual health, especially providers that don't normally talk about that. Also in terms of health access, we're looking at what kinds of technology or different ways of delivering services can help improve access. Things like text reminders, to let folks know when it's time to get a test or time to refill a prescription. The Take Me Home program, which where folks can order HIV and STI test kits for home, and then mobile and low barrier services. And there's lots to talk about there. And then of course, we'll talk about language access and how the system of care addresses that. some of the care coordination work that's done, and some of the work around same day diagnosis and treatment and same day prep, which is really, you know, kind of the state of the art way that San Francisco is trying to move towards in terms of providing diagnosis, treatment, prep, and PEP. So mental health and substance use. So this is really, has some very specific strategies. I mean, there could be a whole there could be a lot of strategies here, but the state is really focused on the overdose prevention and other work in correctional settings, telehealth access to mental health and substance use services, harm reduction infrastructure, expanding low threshold substance use disorder treatment options, and cross-sector collaboration. So this is where we'll talk about the really robust network of community-based drug user health and harm reduction services supported through the CHEP branch and behavioral health. We'll talk about the services in jails, the activities happening there, and what's happening upon discharge for folks, in term, particularly folks with hepatitis C, HIV, and STIs, and how they're how the work that's being done to ensure they get linked to care. And then there was, and I'm still trying to get some information on this, for a while there was a pilot telebute program, which was a telemedicine program for prescribing buprenorphine. And I'm not sure what the status of that is, but if it's continuing, we will include that as well. And lastly, the economic justice, I guess it's not last, we got two more. So the economic justice strategies, like I said, very much overlap with the racial equity strategies in terms of the workforce development, employment for people with lived experience, equitable hiring practices, fair pay, leadership development, universal hiring and housing policies. So things that are really going to support the inclusion of people with a variety of experience in the field and help to really make the workforce robust and inclusive of folks with lived experience and provide them with fair and equitable pay. So lots of things that overlap, but the additional things here are focused on some wage equity initiatives that have been happening at CBOs in San Francisco and how they've approached that, as well as some resources that are being disseminated around hiring people with lived experience and what kind of infrastructure does an agency need to have to be able to support people who may not have had traditional work experience. And last but not least are the stigma-free strategies, which San Francisco is amazing at. Nothing about us without us. Looking at policies, messaging, and information. How do we work with communities to get accurate messaging out there? Addressing medical mistrust and really working to maintain ongoing partnerships. And here's where we'll talk about the many community bodies that the department engages with, ending the epidemics steering committee and HEPCSF, getting to zero, the council. At one point there was an STO community task force and another group called SLAY, but those seem to maybe not have enough resources at the moment to continue, but hopefully we can find a way to make those happen. Really strong focus on peer-based, peer-delivered services under stigma-free strategies. And lastly, around the medical mistrust piece, really San Francisco is doing quite a bit of work around sort of reducing provider bias with a focus on public health detailing so that testing and prep screening can happen in a routine way so that providers aren't having a bias about who they offer these services to. So that was the quick and dirty overview of the blueprint and where we're at with it. And would love to just, you know, hear your overall thoughts, either about the blueprint or about how you think this should be brought to the council.
Yeah, I guess I just want to jump in and just say thank you so much, Dara. That was really helpful. I really liked the presentation. I did have just some follow-up. So you had mentioned specifically data metrics, so you're still discussing that. What does the discussion look like right now? Like, what are y'all thinking?
Yeah. It's been very minimal discussion. And Bill can add if there's been any additional discussion. My recommendation would be that all of these programs and efforts, they have their own evaluation metrics and funder requirements associated with them, and that we really take a much higher level view of what should be measured. So it would be things like that come in the EPI report. Let's look at trends in new HIV infections. Let's look at where the disparities are. Let's have a much higher level take on the metrics, because the department already measures lots and lots of things much more granularly, and I don't think anybody wants to read 100 pages of metrics, but they'll jump in and see if you have anything to add there.
Sure. And just like the last part of that question, you know, I know you mentioned that we're kind of utilizing other plans in existence. I saw the HIV housing work group, which, by the way, you're always welcome to let me know if you want to be on the agenda, getting feedback from the community. But it sounds like for also like an unmet needs analysis, you are looking mostly to what the work has already been done. Is that correct?
It's work that is being done, that's ongoing, and also work that's planned, but maybe not yet executed. So we really focused on that because there's so much going on, so much being planned. I'm sure the department would entertain, you know, ideas for new activities, but unfortunately the blueprint does not come with money. It's just not associated with the grant. And so really, I think this is about a lot about how the work is done and how it's approached. And if there are things that the council has input on, they're absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody else have any questions before we move into like the format and all that stuff? No.
Bill, did you have comments about the metrics?
Sure. So Manuel, again, the idea was not to embark on a lot of new and extra metrics unless they were going to inform how we're going to move forward. So a part of this is just collecting what we do. And Dara is in receipt of a number of the prioritization and allocation, quality management, service utilization, all those documents that we share with the council, that kind of tells the story and hopefully gives you the information that you all need to prioritize and allocate. And in addition to that, the health equity measures we're looking at, we have a pretty extensive process on eliminating disparities between African Americans and the whole population, and a second one with people experiencing housing instability or homelessness, that whole range, again, with the goal of eliminating disparities. So a lot of the data should already be pretty familiar to you all, but it's a matter of putting it in one place so that all the different groups can have access to it. But that said, Manuel, if you think there's a particular data set that's important in informing our plan that's not included, anyone should let us know to look to include it.
Yeah, I guess the only thing that comes to my mind, and I'm working with Bill Music, who is currently writing our HIV housing next strategic plan, you know, he just kind of, I think, made mention to me this past week when we were doing in-person focus groups, is that, you know, a lot of the information from the last plan probably was taken into consideration. And I think just people want updated numbers, you know, like that's always what people say. But it totally makes sense the way that you're going about the approach, so.
But Manuel, if you want to recommend that the plan include housing, HIV and housing specific data, we can look to add that in. I think we referenced the housing plan. I think Dara's looking at that, but we could also call out some of those numbers because they're important for us to look at. Yeah.
Sure. I think the biggest thing, and it goes along with all the plans that are out there, including in the epidemic, is the homelessness, right? And you have that data. And as you mentioned, Dara, y'all check the epidemiology report, which is done every year. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Great. Any other reflections on the blueprint?
I just noticed one thing, hi Dara, on the presentation where you have like a pop-up of the Latinx program. Yes. And so I think that maybe it was just like the way that it's worded could be, mm-hmm. I think you know what I'm talking about. Okay. That was the only thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. There was a typo there, I think, too. Is that what you mean? That it didn't say ANPI?
Yeah, like it had, Black, African American, Latinx, and then in programs or something. I think, it was supposed to go together.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I will fix that. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And what are your thoughts about having the discussion at the council? We could do something open, it's in person, right? The council meeting's in person. We could do something open-ended like this, or we could do something more interactive where we just put butcher paper for each of the social determinants around the room and have people go up and write their ideas. Really up to you.
I love more interactive stuff. It will certainly maybe interrupt the whole passive recipients of information that tends to happen in meetings. I mean, if that's something you feel like you want to facilitate, I think it's great. You know, we've had some of our most robust discussions when we have breakout groups, and even though what you're proposing it aren't breakout groups, it still is getting people up and moving around on a topic-based way. I love it.
Okay. I do have a question, Mark. I mean, how much time have we allotted for this specific in the agenda that's coming up?
They're going to have as much time as they need. The only other agenda item is Nas Marin report and vote. You saw that. She can get through that in half an hour, including Q&A. So I think there's plenty of, I was going to give it 45 minutes. And if we want to make that, boost that to a full hour, like just have that be the remaining part of the evening, then that's plenty of time to have a more deliberate discussion. And also, you know, we might have lost a few people. So I think it's especially important, like if we're going to have maybe, more in the teens than in the 20s to get people motivated rather than being like aimed for the end of the meeting and out the door.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a preference. I mean, it makes sense. And I appreciate what you said, Mark. How are the people feeling? Chuck, what are your thoughts? Co-chair.
There we go. Finally, I'm muted. I like doing the poster stuff by putting it up, because when people get up and because they always write down things that they're not going to say. So we've done this before in the past, and it's always worked out really well. Plus, it's led to a lot more discussion.
And we could invite DPH to be a part of that too. Those DPH members who aren't already part of the council, you know. Wow, Manuel is frozen on a very eerie smile, especially in front of the woods. That smile in front of those woods is kind of frozen.
Oh no.
Just like frozen and ready to get some teen hikers.
What we could maybe do is we could, for each social determinant, we could have like two flip charts, and one would be like, What do you want to see emphasized, or what was great? You know, what did you like and what's missing, kind of thing. And then maybe we could have folks actually get into pairs or groups and sort of go around each station and discuss and sort of collectively write things up so that it's a little bit interactive and not just people in their heads. Something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. We could even do like a count off. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, you know, you're in. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Sounds good. And then we can come back together as a full group and anybody can share, you know, something that stood out from them for them from that exercise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good.
So we'll put you on the second half of the agenda, like right after the break. And so it'll be good too with dinner and people's bellies to get up and move around.
Sounds like a plan.
Great. Anything else you wanted to ask about, Dara?
No, just was the presentation the right level of information and depth? I'm sort of assuming some people will have looked at the blueprint in advance and some people won't, so it's kind of riding that line.
I think you did a good job of like showing how you went about it, the process, you know, what your intentions are. I really appreciated the strategies because a lot of, I was taking notes throughout it and I was just thinking, what are the goals? And, you know, like, what are the main, and you kind of went over the logic around all that. So I thought it was great. I wouldn't be any longer because you do usually lose people at some point, but I thought it was good.
Well, thanks for having me, everybody.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great holiday next week.
Thanks. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, that being said, I don't think there are any other agenda items. We've already set the date for the next one, which we all decided for people who came in a little bit, that we'll be doing that in January. We'll meet again in January. So then, oh goodness, this is see you later. Not a goodbye. So, okay. Meeting adjourned. Thanks, everyone.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.